let's get started.
Oh, wait, just a minute, partner.
No.
Guess again, freak boy.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
AudioToYou.com. Another fresh picked pod from AudioToYou.com. Shutters Inc. with Charlton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 57, the final one for 2006 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from AudioTo.com. And with me on the line once again, Shelton Muller. How are you?
Hey, hi, everybody. How are you, Bruce?
I'm good, mate. And yourself?
Pretty good. Ready to wrap up. Everybody wants everything done by that magic date as if the world is coming to an end. The 25th. Must have it done by the evening of the 24th. Yeah. Because we all know that the world is coming to an end after that. And, yeah. Must get all our jobs finished. It's crazy. But that's all right. Who invented this celebration? It wasn't the Christians. I know that much. Because they could never perpetrate something so unkind upon mankind.
Interestingly, I remember reading somewhere that the birth of Jesus was actually around about January the 6th.
No, earlier, October.
Oh, is it? Oh.
Yeah, simply because, probably early October, late September, simply because as the accounts indicate, the shepherds were in the field, and shepherds are never in the field in December and January. I'm serious, because it's winter. Okay. They always used to bring their flocks indoors, and they would usually live in the flocks would live in the basements under the houses to keep, and actually they'd keep the houses warm. But the fact that and the other thing, the nativity scene is completely wrong, because by the time the Oriental astrologers arrived, and we don't know, it doesn't say there were three,
right.
But by the time they arrived, the accounts say that Jesus and his family were living in a house, and that he was probably about 2 or 3 years old. That's what I mean. Who invented the celebration? It certainly wasn't the Christians, because the Christians would have actually said, well, let's read the account. Let's find out, what actually happened.
Don't let the truth get in the way of a good story.
No, that's right. No, just December 25th is actually an ancient Roman holiday.
It's from pagan times, isn't it?
Has nothing. It's so far removed from the accounts of the four Gospels of the birth.
I do remember reading somewhere that the Roman Catholic Church sort of settled on the 25th of December as a sort of a compromise between what the pagans wanted and what the Christians wanted.
They did the same with Easter, didn't they? So Easter is actually an ancient Babylonian goddess for sex and fertility named Astarte or Ishtar, which is why you have bunnies and eggs and all that kind of
thing. Okay.
Yes.
I see.
So, like you said, never let the truth get in the way of a good celebration.
The gospel according to Shelton, people.
Far be that. No, thanks. There's always some good stuff around it. It is interesting though, isn't it? You get all caught up and it's all so Christian, but it's actually all so not Christian.
It's all just marketing now.
And the Santa, the whole red suit thing, the whole red and white suit was Coca-Cola.
That's right. Father Christmas was their invention.
Well, Saint Nick is a long tradition, but the fat guy with the red and white suit was actually from a Coca-Cola ad that appeared in the late 1800s.
Yeah, but it was Coke who came up with the name Father Christmas.
We had Santa Claus,
but Father Christmas was a Coca-Cola invention.
Interesting. Well, there you go. The things that are perpetrated upon us. I just prefer to steer clear myself. Steer absolutely clear.
On to photographic issues.
Oh, is that why we're here? Okay.
Vaguely recall that that's what we were doing. as we were talking about just before we started recording, there's a likelihood I'm going to be shooting a wedding next year. For a mate of mine. And you were about to tell me about one of the things that got you started or got you through the first few weddings was having, what did you call it, a shoot list?
A shoot list, yeah.
So what's that?
Well, it's I can post one if as a PDF, and indeed anybody wants to download it. It's basically a list of photographs that you take at a wedding to make sure that you've got yourself covered, and that would be what photographs do I need at the house? Okay, I need a photograph of bride with mum, bride with sisters, bride with brothers, you know, bride by a bride full length, bride three quarters, bride half, bride head and shoulders. You know, and then, you know, you sort of tick them off, or either literally or in your head as you go.
Yep.
And then move on to, you know, what photographs do I take at the ceremony? Bride getting out of car, bride with bridesmaids, bride with dad, you know, bride coming down aisle, la, 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 la. So that by the time you're finished, you know, you leave the wedding, you've basically got all the boxes ticked, and you know, you haven't missed anything. I mean, the creativity aspect of photographing a wedding is all personal, and naturally there are things you do and don't do, but the actual making sure you get it all done so that the bride and groom go, oh, isn't this lovely, and oh, look, you've got this, 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 and this, mm-hmm. is a shoot list, you know,
right.
And I've actually published one a couple of times in Total Image and found it very popular. People emailed or called and said, oh, thanks, I've cut this out and laminated it. you know,
stuck it in my camera bag.
Yeah, that's right. But it really helped me. So I will PDF one and post it up on Audio to You.
Awesome.
No worries. No worries. I mean, I don't know how many weddings in North America are going to be photographed over this cold, cold period. I feel for you guys up there. You know, in Canada, North America, all you people freezing up there, apparently. We're actually in Melbourne. We're going through a heat wave down here.
Seeing the number of crazy people who get married in winter here, I wouldn't assume it's any different anywhere else on the planet.
Yeah, although winter in North...
yeah, it's a bit
winter
more extreme,
in Yeah, you know, hello, 40 below, you know, that sort of thing. The winter here is just a rainy day, you know, sometimes, but or a miserable day. But there, you know, they're in 6 feet of snow, you know. It doesn't look good with a bridal, you know, if you can't fan the dress, you know, and set it all up nicely.
What are those two bear rugs doing?
Yeah, that's right. You can't set it all up nice when she's up to her waist in snow, you know. But and the white on the whites just doesn't work.
Yeah.
But we'll post it up nonetheless, because no doubt there'll be some weddings, you know, in this country and other parts of the world. And and of course, you know, you just keep it and wait till you get one. But it was a big help for me. And then, of course, the other thing, you know, is always, if you're photographing weddings, just keep up with the inspiration. Look at the work of other photographers and see.
Definitely.
You can never really plagiarize, because it will always be your own work. So and you can try and copy a pose or something like that, but it will always end up being slightly yours, and you can never get two people to pose exactly the same way anyway. Everybody has their own physical dynamics. So all those sorts of things are just your own inspiration and creativity. But I'll post this list up so that everybody can get one.
Lovely.
Okay. No worries.
And for the final ep of the year, what are we going to talk about?
Well, you know, we've got a fair few weeks before we get back. You know, we've got a month or something before we're talking again. So I thought what I'd do is talk about the means by which we highlight the subject in our image. Now, we've talked about this before, but what I want to run through is sort of like a bullet points type, you know, discussion on the means by which we highlight the subject in the image. And perhaps this could be sort of an assignment we set for ourselves over the next few weeks to, again, tick off the boxes. You know, when I take a picture, am I doing this, 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 and this? I raise this because one of the greatest issues with me when I look at photographs by fellow photographers, both professional and amateur alike, is their failure to really make the subject scream at you, you know, wave at you from you know, a close proximity and say, hey, look at me. When we take a photograph, we are basically saying, here's the subject, look at this, and we put a frame around them, or put something within a frame, within a parameter or a boundary, and say, this is why I took the picture. If we have to explain that, you know, by some sort of title or name, or, you know, show it to somebody and say, oh, I took this picture because, then the photograph has failed miserably. And there are some very common techniques, some of which we've talked about, but what I'm going to do is combine them so that when we're next doing a portrait or a landscape or still life or anything we might be doing, we can think about how we can combine these powerful techniques to make sure that our subject is just screaming at us from within the frame that we've placed it. So these are things that that we can, you know, have a bit of a bash at over the next few weeks. Now, first of all, as we've often said, you know, the two words that I was told when I was 15 years old to make your picture work is get close. And that really simply means to remove all distractions. We've talked about that many times and I won't go into that here. But if something is in your frame that doesn't need to be or is causing you an issue, get it out, because if you possibly can, because all it's going to do is make the eye look at something else. It's a distraction. Remove it. And you do that by either getting in close, you know, or by placing your subject, as we've discussed a couple of weeks ago when we talked about thirds, placing it somewhere on the dynamic spots, those four dynamic spots where the thirds intersect both horizontally and vertically. That's one way of saying, hello, here I am, believe it or not. I hope some of us have tried it because it really is quite dynamic. But there's all sorts of ways that, other ways that we can say, to people, here's the subject. One of them, of course, as we've talked about, is the use of thirds. So just go back to that podcast and have a whole listen if you haven't yet, because that is a very powerful way. But imagine if you were to combine your thirds with other things, such as leading lines. We haven't talked a lot about leading lines, and it wasn't until I wrote an article on the subject that I realized that I had been using leading lines innately without even thinking about it from, you know, in my images. And I will upload some photographs that will not only show you leading lines, but the placements, but how I've combined techniques to make an image stand out.
Yeah, we spoke a little bit about this when you got back from Argentina.
Right.
Because some of the photos there, leading lines were played a big part in.
And a leading line can be, and I, like I say, I do this innately. I don't even think you know that I'm doing it. But they can be very, very powerful, and they are self-described. They are a leading line, and they can be anything. I've got photographs. I'm looking at one right now that I wrote for an article of a fireman, and he's running into a bushfire. And I've taken his fire hose from the bottom corner to lead up to him. Now, I didn't even know I was doing it. I just set that up, and that's the way it was composed. He is actually centrally composed in the image, but which I very rarely do, but it works because there's, you know, other things going on. But the combination of these techniques is what makes the image really powerful. So let's say, for instance, already we've gotten close, we've removed our distractions, we've placed our subject on a third placement within the frame or in a dynamic or key position, and we've added a leading line. Now that could be a pathway, a road, a creek, a river, a fire hose, a fence, someone's arm, someone's leg. It can be anything. And a leading line can also be implied. You don't actually have to have a line, but a series of items within the frame can be sort of placed so that it almost looks like, you know, join the dots. They place themselves, you know, in a line that lead the eye subliminally, you know, to the subject. The other, and they don't have to be straight lines either. S-curves are very, very popular in photographs. We use S-curves, and that's exactly literally what they are, an S-shaped form to lead people through frames often. And if you look at photographs you see of railways, you know, the railway lines that are bent, you know, or photographs you see of landscapes and rivers and creeks, often they have an S curve to them, which is, for some strange reason, again, one of those inexplicable things that we like as humans to see, you know, a soft S curve. If you examine the work of a lot of nude photographers, and I'm not talking about photographers who take their clothes off, I'm talking about photographers who themselves photograph other people naked, the you'll notice that they often use S curves in the body, like the shape of the line of the back as it goes along to the back side. You know, they'll use that line to create a soft S curve. Those things are also very, very dynamic in using to highlight the subject. Then if you add the interesting technique of perspective, whereby you use the optical dynamics of your lens, be it wide angle or telephoto, to add an element of visual dynamism that you don't get with a human eye. We have one focal length in our human eye, but we have the option to use several focal lengths with photography. So if you know what happens when you get a wide angle lens and you put it close up to someone's face and wah, you know, or you put it down low on the ground or up next to a flower or any of these things, you've got these optical dynamics that the human eye just doesn't get. And so they add this element of interest to an image that is not possible with the human eye. So imagine now you've got remove distractions, use leading lines, place your subject within a third, and create some interesting perspective using a wide-angle or telephoto lens. A telephoto is the reverse effect of the wide-angle. It compresses, you know, so it can be extremely powerful. Then, what's our viewpoint? Where are we? Are we too high? Are we too low? Are we just taking the picture from our standing height? Or have we actually spread the legs on our tripod right out and gotten down, you know, to, you know, a foot above the ground? Or, you know, perhaps have we climbed up on something to photograph down? Have we come in, you know, from a different angle or a different height to what we would otherwise, you know, stand there and look at something from? I've seen people take photographs of flower beds from their standing viewpoint. But why would you do that? That's just so everyday, right? So commonplace. Why not get down close to the ground, put on a wide-angle lens, as we've talked before, and you know, and create some interesting dynamics and make that photograph powerful.
So if you're going to shoot it from standing height, then you might as well just go out and look at a flower bed and see it in 3D.
Exactly. What's the point? What's the point? So make your photographs interesting by using those things that are available to you, such as, you know, your perspective and viewpoint. Then, of course, horizontal and vertical composition. I've seen so many people still, you know, not bother to turn the camera around. You know, every photo they take is taken horizontally. A friend of mine sent me some photographs that he took at, say, a nightclub of some jazz musicians. And every photograph he took was taken horizontally. Now, that might have been his choice, but I wonder whether he took the time out to think, now, hang on, I might tighten this up a little bit, because they certainly needed some tightening. And they were, and actually compose, you know, vertically, or what we call portrait. I don't like using the terms horizontal and portrait, or landscape and portrait, because that tends to sort of make us think that every landscape has to be horizontal and every portrait has to be vertical. Nothing could be further from the truth. But have we considered that perhaps we should maybe turn the camera on its side, or maybe yet somewhere between the two? Why do we have to have something perfectly straight? A lot of very dynamic photographs have been taken with the camera at a very skew-if sort of angle. So think in those sorts of terms to add, you know, dynamics to your image. Often we tend to photograph, and I see this in a lot of family snaps, with a horizontal composition because the button's at the top of the camera. And so that's, you know, and we compose centrally because the little focusing thing is in the center of the frame, and that's what we've got to focus on, so that's how we compose. The way cameras are designed sometimes prevent us from, if we're not used to thinking outside the square, of actually composing everything completely wrong.
Although most digital SLRs will allow you to shift the focus point.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, that's for sure. We have gotten into a bad habit, though, since autofocus came into being.
Yeah.
Of putting everything in the middle. And I'm not going to talk about that now, because we've really, you know, flogged that old horse. But the idea of, you know, composing horizontally is often because the camera buttons at the top. On my D200, I've got the battery pack. I buy the battery pack every time because it has that vertical grip. And so I can very comfortably, I would say most of my images vertically, to be quite honest with you.
Right.
And it's just me, just my way. And I love to have that button on the side so that I can, you know, I can use the camera as comfortably in a vertical composition as I would with a horizontal composition. So we've got all these things that we can now, you can use all of them, all of those techniques in one image. And can you imagine how powerful an image like that would be? Now, let's throw in another thing, light. We've often talked about light. But if you've got something in your frame that is illuminated, and it may be the only thing that is illuminated, or a shaft of light strikes it, you've put it in a dynamic position, you've got some incredible perspective, some incredible viewpoint, you've composed it so that it's very pleasing, you've got leading lines going up to it, and it's lit beautifully, it's just going to scream at you. It's going to be decibels upon decibels of audible volume. Look at me, look at me. Then, you know, you add something like a post-processing technique in Photoshop or another image-enhancing program to highlight the subject even further. which I sometimes do, especially in portraiture, of using layers with Gaussian blur and erasing the blur and then combining the layers or mixing the layers so that you've got a sharp, soft image. But I will erase the area in portraits around the eyes and lips, you know, or so that it's all nice and soft except the eyes. That's just pin sharp and it just makes you, hello, look at you. I do that even with landscapes and other images. Also, and I will also use the dodge and burn or a vignette action that I've set up so that, you know, you're basically darkening aspects of the image that you don't need people to see. You don't want to rub out all the detail, or maybe you do, but it just basically draws the eye into the very thing that you want people, you know, to see. So let's run through these as a bullet points type thing that we can say, okay, I'm going to, in my next image that I really concentrate on, be it a landscape or a portrait or a still life or whatever it might be, I'm going to remove my distractions by getting close. I'm going to compose so that the subject is in a dynamic position, which was often a third or a golden mean position. I'm going to see if I can set up some leading lines, either by implication, by a join-the-dots series of other elements within the frame, or by literally using something that leads to the subject. I'm going to use my lens dynamics, you know, some perspective here, either wide angle or telephoto, combined maybe with either loads of depth of field or minimal depth of field. I'm going to change my viewpoint. I'm not going to stand here at 6 feet tall and hold the camera high and just take the picture from where I stand. I'm going to move about a bit. Go to my left, go to my right, go up, go down, see what really, really works. Going to see whether the image requires a horizontal or vertical composition. And then once I've done all of those things, I might then take the image, in my digital image, into the computer and, you know, highlight the subject by other means, such as dodging or burning and blurring techniques. And if you can do all of those things in one image, that would be probably very difficult. But you can imagine that how powerful that image would be if indeed, you know, there'd be no doubt about what the picture was about. And often we ask ourselves, what makes a dynamic image? Well, I've found usually it's because the subject is screaming at you. And it's the image requires no explanation. It is there, and you look at it, and you go, "Wow!" Because it's arousing feelings in you. It's evocative, and that's what makes a dynamic image. And that could be, you know, a combination of these techniques, or, you know, very simply if it's a social comment style photograph, a documentary style photograph, photojournalistic, it might be different. But if you can combine some of these techniques in one image, you're going to make it very, very powerful indeed. So over the next few weeks, until Bruce and I get back from slacking off, we'll, think about how you can use these techniques to make your images very powerful. If you can combine as many of these as possible in one image, you will make it more powerful with each step that you apply, each one of these things that you apply. And I'll try and find some of my images that might sort of show a combination of these techniques so that you can see what we're talking about over the next few weeks.
And we want to see some examples when we get back in January.
Yes.
Of how you've executed all of this over the next 4 or 5 weeks to make some dynamic images.
Let's just really try and do that. You know, we've got some holidays coming up, the world is full of things to see. So let's just do that. Let's just give it a try. If, by the way, over the next few weeks you're a little bit hungry for photo tips and techniques, I've initiated a new website. This is not to distract from audiotoyou.com, because I will always be uploading images to coincide with our podcasts. But if you wanted to go to photo.blorge, that's photo.blorge, blorge.com. Now, a blorge is a gorge of blogs. So this is something that my business partner and I have come up with, photo.blorge.com. We're constantly uploading. It's a new site, so bear with us. But we're going to be uploading some photo tips and photo news and product news on this site so that photographers make it a bit of a mecca to go to. I've already got some tips and techniques up there that you can have a look at with comparison images. And, you can get some, if you're a little bit starved for information, go there and have a bit of a look.
Fantastic. Okay, well, I think it's time that we said thank you very much to everybody who's listened to the podcast over the last 12 months. And, and particularly to everyone who's been with us from the start. Yes. Thank you also to those people who have made donations via the PayPal button. That has been very gratefully accepted, and thank you. And, yeah, I guess we'll talk with you all mid-January.
Now, everybody, you keep safe, okay? Because there's some lunatics on the road over the next little while, so I don't want to hear that we've dropped off in listenership for all the wrong reasons.
Exactly.
Please keep safe, everybody. You know, I'm not the kind of person to go around waving, you know, or saying Merry Christmas for reasons we discussed at the outset. The whole thing just doesn't make any sense. But that's another story. But I just wanted to make sure that everybody is happy and safe. Have a great time with your families, because your family is the most important bunch of people you've got. Not your boss, not your workmates, you know, not your clients, your family. So enjoy your time and keep safe. Have a great holiday if you're getting one, and we'll catch up with you in 2007.
Absolutely. Until then, take care.
Yes.
See you, Shelton.
See you, mate.
You've been listening to another Fresh Picked Pod from audiotou.com. Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable.
You be the boss.
Hear what you want to hear
when you want to hear it.
Hey, now that's a good idea.
Audiotou.com. Hit us today.
And remember,
Control D to bookmark.
Audiotou.com.